before the first, the book will probably be done in about 7 days worth of work. And then from that point on, then I've got a friend in the publishing industry who's going to be helping me clean it and streamline it and draw some things out stronger and maybe tone some things down, and so that when it does go into a publisher's hands, it's basically going to be the final product. So.
Nice.
Well, yeah, being the first one, I want to make sure that I it's like I have no, if it was 10 years ago, you know, I still had some sort of interest in, who knows, fame and all the, you know, the physical wealth and all, not that this, you know, I love all that, but well, not so much the fame thing. It'd be nice to be able to do it without that. In a way, it's funny, but it's like that's all just not there anymore. I feel so complete with family and everything, and in my work itself, that the yearn is gone, except for the yearn to, or the desire to get it out there. The yearn to receive something is just gone, which is interesting. It's a cool place to be at, actually. I'm not a slave to it anymore.
I have to say, Del, that thanks to your work, I'm really living into a space of that same experience in my work of switching from that doing in order to get to doing as a side effect of my being, and then just detach from what the other side of it will look like, knowing that whatever the other side looks like is exactly what I need to be experiencing, supposed to be experiencing, and it has allowed me to live into a new level of just kind of fearlessness, because I don't have attachment to what's going to be there on the other end. It's a sheer focus on just service.
It's interesting.
Brothers.
So many people have been coming back with to me in the last couple of weeks saying that, which is interesting because I never, it's like I've never heard it so much all in one time. In the last couple of weeks, people have been thanking me because it's helped them to be fearless. And I'm like, wow. And I think the reason of that is what it is because they're willing to feel it. And it's in being willing to step forward and actually allow it to be in the system in the process. That's how we move through it. However, if we do what most of the, you know, last 20, 30 years of this sort of self-improvement spiritual philosophies tell you to turn away from shadow and affirm that you're light. But unfortunately, the turning away is darkness. That's what darkness means. It means I'm not looking. It means I don't know what it is. I'm not conscious of it, and I don't want to process it. And the act of light is the affirming of the light. I am the light, while looking directly at all of those shadow aspects. That's what light is. But unfortunately, most of us, or a lot of us, just aren't doing that because of things that we're being fed. And I think the reason we're being fed that is because it sells a lot of books, and it'll sort of get people on the, you know, sort of on the feeding tube or something like that, you know, and gets them on the feeding tube, and they keep coming back and coming back because they realize when they walk away from the feeding tube, they feel feeble and they got to go back to the feeding tube again and sort of feed back into that when just exactly as we are, where we already are whole. And that doesn't mean we don't, you know, lean on each other and support each other, but it does mean that the need to feel that there's a, or the, even the observation that there's a piece missing or a key that you still haven't found is what expands your life. It's not your affirmations. The affirmations are nice, but the affirmations will resonate also not only what's in line with them, but also what's the exact opposite of them. And most of the philosophies tell you to turn away from what's coming up when the only way to process through it is to process through what's coming up. And that's what an affirmation really is. It helps you remove the bushel baskets off the light because you already are the light. We don't need to convince ourselves that we are something we already are, except in the process of realizing that when you turn that light up, anything unlike it's got to come up. And anyway, so.
Yeah. No, I hear you, because that's what's really helped me. It's like taking the concept and applying it to that next level, just like how you always speak on. It's not about the information, it's about the transformation, and that only happens with the application of the information that we're given. And just being able to, I guess, just for myself, I started doing this work consciously in the beginning of 2010, and it was about halfway through 2010 that I started to see some huge shifts in my life, and then I was introduced to your work through Joy. And then that just, like, it just filled all these little gaps that all the other great mentors and information that I had come across. And again, the real transformation happened when I started not just talking about and learning about the concepts, but started applying them in my life. And as I started applying them, I just started building this amazingly solid foundation that I just continue to grow from. But it was your work that helped to fill in those little gaps. I just kind of look at it like poured concrete, and you just filled in those little gaps that allowed me to come full circle and really heal, you know, my stuff that I had going on inside of me that was keeping me separate from people who talked about Jesus or anything dealing with religion in general. And it just allowed me to become so fluid and flexible, and it's like it allowed me to have this whole other language of being able to relate to people and understand where they were coming from and express myself in such a more authentic, genuine way. And really, it was that end of 2010 going into 2011 that everything was just like from that point on just changed in my life. So now I've spent the last going into my fourth year of doing the work, being and experiencing and testing this stuff out for myself, because luckily I've had mentors that say, don't take my word for it. Try it out yourself. See your own results. And I mean, the results just absolutely speak for themselves. And now that I'm listening to the new work that you have coming out, this whole just a whole nother layer of consciousness and awareness, and all of it is hitting me in a way that I don't need to go through another 4 years of convincing myself. I can accept it on faith, and as the stuff comes up, I literally have been able to the last couple of weeks. When I feel stuff rise, it used to be where, okay, I need to go out for a run, or I need to do something to allow this energy to move through me and to be able to process. And now it's like just that awareness of, okay, I'm feeling not myself today. I'm feeling a little bit off. I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling tired, whatever it is that I am feeling. Oh, yes, that's right. Anything that is not God, is not beautiful, is not the truth, it's just an illusion. So I'm going to go ahead and let that illusion fall away. And within minutes of just having that consciousness rise up within me, I instantly shift. And that's the first time that I've ever been able to do it so instantly. Just that awareness, okay, it's just an illusion, and I just allow it all to fall away. And before I know it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I wasn't really feeling too hot about 15 minutes ago, but I hadn't even thought about that since. Because it's just that recognition, and whatever it is that you've offered to me that has allowed me to get into that space, I am eternally grateful for, and really am committed to helping other people find that same experience in life, and just that full on, that fearlessness that I speak of is rooted in that, in the knowing that if there is something that's rising up inside me that is not awesome, limitless, beautiful, one of those feelings that we would use to describe God, that it's not a truth. So why invest in it and just allow it to be and fall away? Not make it wrong, not shut it out, not close it off, just, look at that. Now I have a choice, and I'm choosing to get back to the love, choosing to get back to the true core center of my being and move forward from that space. Awesome.
So you've allowed yourself to come out of the classroom. And I'm not saying don't go to the classroom, but, yeah, a lot of people, we just stay in the classroom, and we don't really, and it's like if we're not in the classroom, we only live our life to live up to what's in the classroom, you know, to come back and say, yeah, okay, I did it, you know, what's next? And the fact of the matter is, really, in truth, life is the classroom, and it's the segregation between classroom and life that causes the division that, you know, we're unconscious of in the first place, that we think it's two different things. There's, I got to go to the feeding tube to get whatever it may be, when in fact there is no feeding tube because there's only one. And that's a big thing for a lot of people. It freaks them out, actually. When you tell them they are what they're looking for, a lot of people I can actually say that to, and they won't even hear it. They'll actually go, what? Huh? That doesn't make sense. And I'm like, well, you know, this is a moment. It's a now moment thing. It's not something that someone can explain to you in a way that you're going to grok, because the thing is, it's about not understanding. It's about being open, and it's about letting go of the belief systems, and it's what's new. I mean, that's what the kids are coming in with now, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that actually, that's something that I've been able to use from your work a lot in the work that I do. I work with, I teach a series of self-mastery courses that I developed through a, I teach them to a group of adults that are unemployed, underemployed, and the majority of them have some kind of criminal background or addiction background or something in their background that would stop them from being able to just, you know, find a job, keep a job, get a quality job. And I hear it over and over again because they're coming from such a place of desperation and such a victim state. And I have a lot of them that, that when I start to touch on the spiritual side of things, they'll say, you know, I used to have such a great relationship and connection with God, and I've just lost that. And I find myself questioning and wondering, and I feel this just longing and this emptiness inside. And being able to use from your work and just say, you know, that feeling that you're feeling, that longing, that desire that you have inside of you, that is God speaking to you to let you know that God is still here with you. And that one thing, it just clicks in them every single time that I say it. I really see that light go on and this hope rise up within them and just that understanding of, wow, instead of letting me push this away and seek the thing that's going to make it go away, just that, that realization that, maybe there's something more to what I'm feeling. So I love you. I love the work that you do. I'm just so grateful for what you bring to the table and how you're committed to living your life. And as I mentioned through Facebook, just hearing the discussions that you've been having on the Aramaic Fridays, it's just been awesome because you do get to touch on things that you don't have, you know, a full audio dedicated to, or, you know, perhaps some of it's amongst your hours of videos on YouTube, but just to hear you be able to get a little bit more personal and not just, hey, this is what I do, you might want to try it, but, you know, the day-to-day kind of thing. When you're in the day-to-day moments, the fact that you still have goals that you have in mind that you have to remind yourself to cancel, and, you know, you still get struck whenever something completely off your intended agenda for the day comes across the table, you know, but you're able to process it and move through it in the now, and that's definitely where I've hit in my life, and as I share with people, this is the process that I go through inside myself. They're like, wow, that's such a process. It's so lengthy. And it's like, well, you're doing it too. You're just doing it in an opposite way than the way that I'm doing it. And now, you know, it used to be a lengthy process, and explaining it to you is a lengthy process. But when it happens in the moment, it's an instant shift just back to who I know that I am. And it's such a powerful place to be and such a liberating, free place to be. And I'm really committed to bringing that as consistently as possible to the table when I'm dealing with my daughter and being aware of the example that I set forth, my husband and I set forth for her just through the choices that we make and who we choose to be as we go throughout the day in our interactions.
Yeah. That's, you know, the thing I'm always saying to people is, and it's a, it's the most difficult lesson. I tell them it really doesn't matter as an example what you're talking about. It doesn't matter what you're saying. I'm not saying that, you know, what you say and what you talk about doesn't matter at all. I'm not saying that, you know, affirmations don't matter. But what I'm saying is what matters is when the rubber hits the road and when the chips are down or whatever, when something is resonating, what's happening then. I'm not really necessarily just interested in what someone's doing when they're, as they're a great speaker in front of 500 people, but I'd love to see them, you know, with their family and relate with their families. And that's to me, that's what's real, is what's happening there. And that's the big challenge. Children, I can't imagine a bigger challenge or a greater reward in truth. It's both. It's interesting, like, just with what I do, because I'm also out a lot. I'm out on the road a lot. And when my little almost three-year-old girl says, "Daddy, when are you coming home to see me?" That's when I realize, hey, wait a second, she doesn't care that I'm not, you know, why I'm not here. She just cares that I'm, or she knows that I'm not. And I've been starting to send the message out subtly lately to let people know that this thing of me traveling is going to come to an end. After the first book is promoted out there, I'm basically retreating back to the mountains of North Carolina, and I'm sticking close to home, and people are going to have to come to me. It doesn't mean I won't travel ever for anything, but just sort of constantly out there, you know, with my blood on the streets kind of thing. That's not going to be happening. Probably, I would say, a 95%, maybe even more percent reduction in what I do outside of Asheville, and a lot of that is because, a lot of it has to do with my children, my family, and a lot of that focus goes to Shemaya, our littlest, because, we were told before she came what her role is, but now it's starting to become more prominent, and I'm going to be, from the ground up, training her. She's going to be, learning Aramaic and everything. And if there's a point where she gets and says, Dad, I don't think this is for me, regardless of what my gut tells me and my heart and what I've been told, I'm going to say, okay. But she's going to have that base up to that point. So, but if it is for her, however, that's going to be something different. It's amazing. So many talks I've done in several different states lately, whenever she's there, she always wants to walk and sit next to me or, walk up, sit in my lap or sit next to me. So I just keep fostering that, and she seems very comfortable in front of huge groups of people. So we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah, I love that. I love hearing you say that, because I just, when I found out that I was pregnant with Keely, there was, of course, it was a shock to my system. That wasn't what I had planned. I was planning on doing that maybe around this time now, get started on, not having a one-year-old now. And it was just such an instant shock to reality that this isn't what I had planned. This isn't where I saw my life going over the next year. And thankfully, because of my awareness and understanding and all the work that I had done on myself, I was able to, within about, 5 minutes, shift into a place of understanding that, okay, just because I'm having a baby, it doesn't mean stop everything else that I'm doing. It just means that I am fully prepared to do everything that I'm doing and have a baby as well. So becoming pregnant and going through that whole experience, it allowed me to shift into a level of faith and surrender that I had never previously experienced. And just knowing all the work that I had lined up, seeing what direction my work was going, really living my passion and my purpose and radically impacting people's lives in such an amazing way, through the service that I offer, that I don't know what is planned for her. I don't know what her future is going to be like, but I cannot help but feel instinctively that she has really big work to do, and that I am laying down a foundation, not just for myself, but to really set her up to do what she is coming into the world to do. And I haven't spoken to anyone to find out what possible path she may have or why she came into my life when she did. I mean, I'm now a year into it, can totally see why she came when she did for me personally. But the main thing that I focus on is continuing to do the work for myself in order to be the example for her, and taking it on a whole new level of inspiration to clear up what I have going on inside of me, not only for her sake, example-wise, but so that she doesn't have to deal with it later on down the road, that I'm not subconsciously just passing along all of my fears, all of my worries, all of my limitations or self-imposed limitations onto her. And I really move into the parenting department from a space of her coming into the world whole and complete, and that it's for me to always remember that, honor that, and look to support that versus bringing in this blank slate that it's my job to pile a whole bunch of stuff on top of. So I find it just really serendipitous syncing up with your teachings and what your message is and your purpose that you're living out in your world, and the fact that you have this beautiful, amazing, shiny, bright, beautiful angel that has blessed your life over the last couple of years. And when I heard on the Aramaic Friday interview, you mentioned about how your approach to parenting, it caught my attention, because what you referenced in that short little 6 minute little clip of mentioning it is exactly what I'm doing with my daughter. And it was refreshing to know that somebody else that I was so like-minded with was taking the same approach to parenting. And it also really hit me how few people I know have this awareness for themselves, let alone being able to bring it to their daughter. And simple and little things that you mentioned in your instinctive toning that you have done with your daughter, I found quickly that when, like, one of the first times my daughter was really upset, she was probably, I don't know, 3 months old in that time frame. And she is one of the most laid-back, content, easygoing, happy, but her pictures speak for themselves. Like, that is Keely at majority of the time. And she just hit this phase where she was just crying and crying and crying, and there was nothing that I could do to soothe her. You know, it wasn't a diaper thing. It wasn't a hunger thing. It was just this incessant crying. And I thought to myself after, you know, this went on for like 10, 15, 20 minutes, so out of character for her, I just thought to myself, okay, if I was upset, if I was worked up, what would I do to center myself, to calm myself down? And I thought, well, okay, first of all, I would start breathing. And so I just started taking these just deep inhales and breathing in and out. And then it occurred to me, I was like, well, let me just intone om. And I just did these oms. And by like the second, I was probably halfway through the first one, she stopped. And she started to calm down. And as I was just intoning the sound of om, she just resonated with it. I don't know how to explain it other than it was just a 180-degree turn from where she was before. So I quickly just found, okay, these aren't things that just calm me down. They're things that I can do for her as well. And when I heard on your interview that you were, you know, speaking the Lord's Prayer to your daughter and just doing this intoning with her, I was like, wow, it's so nice and validating and reaffirming to hear that there was something to that, that it wasn't just it was definitely an instinctual thing on my part, but it definitely encouraged me to do it more often with her and to bring that to the table. So I'd love to just hear anything that you have to share with your experience with Shamaya and bringing in the toning and what that has done for her and your experience with her.
You know, it's interesting because just this morning I was writing a section in the book about toning with children. And I also went off into a side thing that I don't know if it's going to end up in that book, but I've been just becoming so, well, I've been hyper-conscious for a while of it, but really applying it and putting it into the practice lately that the more unlike us, not necessarily unlike, but the more the resonance or the overall frequency or gathering of frequencies or timbre or tone or presence of a child is unlike us in terms of qualities that we don't have or qualities that aren't quite as strong as us, you know, certain overtones and undertones and frequencies, the more unlike us, the more they seem to be, oh my God, beautiful being of light, which is funny because the when they're most like us, those are the ones when it seems like, oh my God, you know, it feels like a discordance, etc. And I believe the reason for that is because when you're looking at your, not everybody wants to look at the reflection in the mirror. As an example, Shamaya has like so much, it's just like a lot of the kids that are coming in, especially less than 5 years old, though not just confined to that, they're coming in with just higher frequencies and more open frequencies, and they seem to have less baggage. And my 14-year-old, almost 15 in a couple of weeks, just a week after Shamaya turns 3, Lucinda is almost like a carbon copy of me. She's very strong. She's a very deep thinker. She's a very deep feeler. And it's funny because Lucinda and I, she's like probably my greatest teacher in recognizing myself, because in her, you know, things are constantly popping on each other. And that, you know, that's, you know, in what some would see positive and some would see as negative. And I think the reason that a lot of that people really slam heads with, either it's a child or a parent or a sibling, is when there's a lot of self-similarity. And what's happening is we're being shown ourselves. We're being shown our own reflection. And it's really easy to kind of focus in when it's something that, you know, somehow deeply, instinctively, unconsciously even, we feel awakened by that presence because it's something that's not quite as strong inside of us. But when there's something that is inside of us, a lot of times, you know, two of the same pole are going to repel against each other. And you can have two positives in the same battery, nothing happens. You can have two negatives in the same battery, nothing happens. And I think the reason nothing happens is because what it's doing is it's rising up all those bushel baskets inside of ourselves. Whatever our kids do, whatever we haven't dealt with, they're going to – Michael Rice said that to me before our first daughter was born. He's like, Dale, anything you haven't dealt with in your life is now going to come flying back at you in living color and full Dolby sound. And I got what he was saying. And it's amazing because I've grown just even so much in the last few months in terms of with my family and, you know, in the communication and being engaged. And our son Mikey, he loves toning. Maya loves toning. Lucinda's like, you know, maybe, I don't know. But it's taken me into a whole new place in my work where I even woke up in a dream 3 weeks ago and was basically shown that I need to be on the side of my adult books. Like, as soon as the adult book is done, I'm going to be immediately into a book for children, toning with children, and families toning, sitting in a circle together. And I realize it's a whole, it's almost like it's not a new spiritual practice. It's one of the oldest spiritual practices ever, is simple, basic toning, even a simple sound. But for some reason, it's just coming through me in such a strong way that I realize there's a lot there for a lot of people. And the thing about toning, for me, that's so profound is it bypasses the intellectual meanings of the words or whatever the preconceived definitions are in any particular language, and it goes right to the experience itself. And that's why I'm excited of the book tour, because when I do that, the first thing I'm going to say basically at all these bookstores is, thank you for coming, now let's do some toning, which is pretty unusual for a new book guy. You know, most people would just go out there and start reading out of the book and whatever, yakking and trying to get their attention through words, but I'd rather help them awaken what's already inside of them through sound itself. And it's exciting.
So that opens up like a whole another level of understanding of what's taking place. So to the untrained or unknowing eye, it's just a matter of making these sounds and vibrations that happen with our voice, which is something that I've really learned through you. It's opening in my mind to understanding the power of the Aramaic language in itself versus our black and white written word on a piece of paper, and how much we miss those extra dimensions of the sound and the vibration and that resonance with us, and how you, I've heard you say, just listening to the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, you don't have to understand a word that's being said, just listening to it, that experience of the sound is a healing within itself. What can you share as far as what is happening? I understand that the whole reflection and that we're being shown the aspects of ourselves that we're not aware of or not looking at or keeping in the dark. But what's happening when with the intonements, and why is it catching their attention, and why is it such a calming thing that's happening?
You know,
for anybody who might be a little hesitant to, you know, maybe self-conscious on the intoning or not understanding of its benefits beyond that.
Yeah, you know, if you would ask me this 6 months ago, I probably would have had a little bit of a different response. Let me answer with the six-month-old response would have been something closer to that the sounds themselves have healing qualities, and that, you know, the ancients believed that as you made the sound, you awakened that experience within yourself. And yes, I believe that's part of it, but it's gone beyond that now, where I'm realizing that it's not actually the sound itself. It's the fact that our openness and our feminine allowing and surrender into that tone allows our presence to open up. It allows our heart and our spirit to open up. And that is the actual presence that embeds itself in the tone that causes Keely to, you know, do a 180-degree turn. She didn't do a 180-degree turn. You did a 180-degree turn, and she was allowed to be who she was in that process. There's the beauty there, you know.
That's exactly what just clicked in my mind as I was listening to your explanation, that it was more a reflection of the energy that I was moving into, more so than anything that she was doing independently of me.
Yeah, because, I mean, really, in the end, there is nothing independent of anything. And, you know, it's only been within the last couple of months, too. I've been in the hyper-growth phase, you know, the last year, especially the last 6 months, and it's only been within the last couple of months that I realized that my work is not supposed, you know, it really means absolutely nothing to me. It would mean nothing to me, or it's not at least a motivation to me to somehow eventually be accepted by the real, you know, and this isn't self-deprecating, this is more of a joke, but the real scholars, put real in quotes, the ones that are sort of, let's say, classically trained. As an example, you've got, let's say, a musician that's, you know, been whatever, child prodigy, and they've been playing Chopin since they were 6 years old, and they've got all the classical training, and they're a sight reader, and they've got perfect pitch, and they have relative pitch, and you can tell them, sing me in, you know, an E-flat minor chord with a sharp 11, you know, which is a bizarro chord, and they can bang it right off, and that's one aspect of it, and that's great, but yet I feel like I'm more of like a Neil Young, which is the one who can't read a note, the one who, although I can read a note, you know, but it's the one who isn't interested in just following in the footsteps of what's been left before. They understand that it's a great guide, but understand that just because someone has walked before you does not mean that that's the only path that is the most efficient from one place to another. And it's something that I've only really in the last couple of months come into the realization that I'm not necessarily, I really don't care if I'm ever welcomed into, like, you know, the real scholar room. I don't care because I'm not here for that. I'm here to be open, and I'm here to awaken, and I'm here to be the light, and I'm here to allow the shadow to be what it is so that we can be the light. And it's so little about the words on the page. Like, as an example, I'm realizing so much, and this is something that in my gut I've had, but it's become so clear to me that, as an example, just because we know all the possible definitions of whatever one of the words of Jesus does not in any way whatsoever imply that we know what those definitions mean. As an example, I take a lot of flack from a lot of the real scholars. It's not something I talk about publicly a lot, but I'm basically on a fairly consistent basis being bashed in chat rooms and like online message boards on different scholarly things. And they'll make fun of the toning, and they'll make fun of how, you know, this guy does awoon. With just the word Our Father, that's as far as they can go on that one. And it's interesting because I realize that just because, like, as an example, you can define the word Teshbukta as glory doesn't mean you understand what glory means. And to me, my work's not done until I can take it all the way to the end and there's no questions left of what something means in its purest essence. And that's the beauty of children for me, is toning with children. And when you do toning with children, it's even best to, like, not describe the word that you're about to do in terms of its definition, but rather just give it to them, let them do it with you, and then ask them how they feel about it. Because with adults, you know, there's such a mental aspect that wants to somehow be filled with information, when for me, toning is about the emptying, and the kids know if you really know what you're talking about or not. And it forces me to, I don't know if force is the word, but it allows me to absolutely boil it down to its purest essence and pull all the frills off, because they don't care about the frills and they don't care about the definitions. They just want to feel it and they want to be in the experience. And that's something we could absolutely learn as adults, but it is not in any way whatsoever encouraged in the scholarly world. It's actually discouraged. It's, you know, whenever anyone does something like that, Neil Douglas Klotz or whoever it may be, they're quite often slammed for walking off of the path and going into the uncharted territory. But in the words of so many great thinkers before us, the map is not the terrain. Just because you have the map doesn't mean that you understand where it is that you are. So kids allow us to open to that.
Thank you for touching on that, and in your previous work touching on that, because it's really helped me in my own personal endeavors and in sharing the work that I share, and understanding that part of the disconnect that I have with people is not what I'm bringing to the table, but what they think I'm bringing to the table, because the words that I use have a completely different meaning to me than they would have even 4 years ago before I started consciously doing this work. And understanding that, yeah, they can hear every word that comes out of my mouth, but what is most important is for them to pay attention to what they feel inside themselves when they hear the words that I say, when they hear the concepts that I bring to the table, because that's going to tell them and myself way more than okay, yeah, I understand the words that she's using, and this is the meaning that I have behind each of those words. Because the feelings that come up inside of us whenever you hear the concepts that I bring to the table, it's going to be so much more telling, you know. And then we can start to look at, okay, well, why are you feeling resistance around this concept or this idea, and get to the real root of what is bringing up their stuff, not do they think that what I'm saying is valid or not valid.
That's a huge, I was just going to say, that's a huge differentiation that's happening now in whatever spiritual teachings, is the realization, and it's something that the ones in the last few decades, it's not really in there, is that understanding that this isn't about somehow implanting a piece of information from my knowledge into someone else's brain, but it's rather understanding that whatever it is that's falling off of out of my mouth, you know, not only in sound and words and concepts, but also in presence or the lack of presence, that that's going to resonate with what's already in their system, and they're not necessarily going to hear what I said. And it happens all the time that I can say one thing, and people will say, you just said, and I'll be like, no, actually, I didn't. And someone will say, no, what he actually said was da-da-da-da, and I'm like, no, I didn't say that either. And they're like, well, no. Third hand goes up, Dale said exactly this, bop, 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 bop. And I'm like, actually, that's not what I said either. And it's a funny thing because, like as an example, when I go to speak somewhere that I've never been before and they don't know what to expect exactly, they've seen some videos or read something or they got some of my CDs, you know, and I come into the room and it's almost like Niagara Falls because I've gone beyond the point of needing to hold anything back at this point. I just want to be open, and it's a very strong, rushing, flowing thing for people. And the ones that aren't willing to let go of their mind, you know, what Rumi called that trickery and hypocrisy, you know, of theology, they're not willing to let go of the frameworks of the beliefs in their mind. They'll actually have an experience as if they don't understand what I'm saying. But it's not that they don't understand what I'm saying, because what I'm saying is very, 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 very crystal clear. What's actually happening is what I'm saying, the presence of that, the energy of that is resonating the belief systems that are already inside of them. And as those belief systems rise in the system, if they either haven't been taught to process them or willing to feel them and look at them, it's going to throw them into a state of confusion, because as all that junk rises to the surface, almost all of a sudden you can't see through the water anymore. And they're not able to be in the open flow because they're so obsessed with the junk on the surface, and they're going to look at me as the trigger and say, you know, what you're saying is confusing. Can you clear it up? And there's going to be the people that are willing to see through that and process that, that have actually done the inner work, and they're going to go, it's as clear as day to me. I don't understand. You know, how can you not get this? Dale said it in the most simple way possible, and that's it. It's not necessarily about me giving the, it's not about me giving the missing keys or anything like that or new information. It's about being in that open experience in the moment, and those that are willing to be in that moment with me and to surrender will have a deeply profound experience. Even if they don't understand a word that I just said intellectually, they're willing to have the feeling of presence and to have that direct experience. And that's something that you take with you, as opposed to new belief systems, because you just learned all kinds of great facts from the Aramaic scholar and you walk out the door and your ego is 10 pounds heavier because of that, rather than allowing it to crack your ego down and burn away some veils, which not everybody's ready for. The youngest kids that I'm around, they're ready for it, and they want to run at it full speed. They don't want to play games anymore. They don't want theology. They're not interested in fingers pointing at the moon. They want to eat the moon itself, and that excites me in so many ways. It just excites me.
Mm. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I love that what you're bringing to the table, and it goes the same with the work that I do. It's beyond you or me sharing words or sharing information. It's getting down to a core truth. And regardless of how you feel about it or what you think about it or the intellectualization of it, the you know, being able to process it all, it's a matter of, regardless of how you feel about what it is that I'm saying, this strikes the chord, and there is a truth and a resonance, and it gets people's attention in a new way. And again, some people are open for it and ready for it, and some people are not. But I really hold that space that each group that I enter into, they don't know who I am, and they don't know what it is that I'm going to bring to the table, and they don't know anything. And again, they may like it, might not like it, but at the end of the whatever the situation is, there's no denying that there's some truth to what they just experienced, and be it either a truth that I am owning or that they can see that it's something that I believe to be true or have a level of truth with, or it's striking something within them, and it just makes sense that it's not for us to be here to suffer and be victims and be miserable all the time, that it feels more truthful and more alive and more how we are supposed to be in those joyous, peaceful places, and that's what we're all striving to get back to, and no matter what means we take. And the core of what I bring to the table, it all comes down to this concept of what I call radical responsibility, and learning to use our emotions as a tool to be able to navigate through life. And I just simply call it emotional responsibility, to be able to take 100% emotional responsibility. And maybe some people would call this, you know, being able to manage your energy or being able to manage your emotions. But it's just taking on a level of emotional responsibility in that I am 100% responsible for the emotions that I'm feeling at any given time. And it's nobody else's responsibility to make sure that I feel any certain kind of way. So if I want to maintain a level of peace, then that's my responsibility to make sure that every experience that I have, that I am being peace and that I'm bringing peace to the table, and I'm not waiting for all the perfect circumstances to align around me, as I used to do, in order to bring that peace to me. And when my husband and I were talking about what kind of intentions we wanted to have with our daughter, at the time not even knowing that we were having a daughter, but with our child that we're bringing into the world, I said the number one thing that I would like to teach my child is emotional responsibility. And as I moved into being a parent, really taking on that level of emotional responsibility for myself is the key way of being able to have my daughter do the same in her life. We have to be the example of emotional responsibility in order to get that reflection back from our kids. And one of the things that really touched me that you had mentioned along with the intoning with your daughter is understanding that what these beautiful little babes trigger within us is simply that they're triggering something that lies within us, and it's not for us to get them to be a certain way so that we can be happy, but being able to learn from what it is that they just triggered from within us. And I'd love to hear your take on how you do this with your daughter, your experience with that, or, you know, with your wife, with your other two kids as well, because I'm sure that the lovely Shemaiah is not the only one who stirs things up within you.
You know, that's actually what the meaning of love your enemies was. There's not really actually a word in ancient Aramaic for enemy in the way that we think of enemy. What that word actually meant for enemy in that case, bubaikun, laboil de bubaikun, what that actually meant was someone that when you're in their presence, you constrict, you shrink back, you constrict your breath, you don't breathe as deeply, you don't breathe as shallow, you're not paying attention to the natural rhythms of the body or what's happening around you, but you actually, like I said, shrink back and you're not fully in the experience. You could put it as simply as, who are the ones that I stop breathing when they say the right thing, or that one person walks into the room, no matter how spiritual I think I am, and that person walks in, the one person that can push our buttons, and I don't engage, and I pull back, and I pull back to the other side of the room, and I don't allow myself to breathe. Those are our greatest healers. And actually, what's funny about that is it's our intimate relationships. And it could be the boss that's around you all the time. It could be, you know, the mother-in-law. It could be your child, your spouse, your brother, your sister. It's the ones who you allow that you're around a lot. And the more you're around them, the more access, it's almost like the more access their trigger finger has into the deeper levels of your own being. It's just a natural human thing. The more comfortable is the word we would use that we get with people. Whether we make a conscious choice or not, they're able to get deeper and deeper and deeper down in. They're not actually doing it. It's just how deep we allow it to go within our own system. And what happens is, as an example, you know, Michael Rice would call it the look. You know, my 15-year-old daughter, almost 15, can walk into the room and shoot me a certain look, and there can be 40 people in the room, and I can just go, oh, my God, did you see that? Oh, it was horrible. She does that all the time. She does it because she knows it pisses me off. Da, 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 da. And everybody else in the room could be smiling, going, my God, she's really beautiful. You know, like, what's his deal, you know? And it's all about it. It's like, even if they're pushing our buttons, they're still our buttons. And it's the absolute greatest human challenge that I can imagine, to be in the family situation and actually engage and be engaged. It's the first place that we point to someone outside of ourselves and say, you did this to me. And it makes me think of what I was, 1993, so I would have been 21 years old, and I was very close to going to, actually, it's not something I really talk about a lot, but going to Plum Village outside of Bordeaux, France, which is Thich Nhat Hanh's little village there. I thought I was going to be I wanted to be a Buddhist monk. I had studied Buddhism just obsessively for years and years and years, really deep into Buddhist meditation, Siddhartha, the whole thing. It was interesting in my last call over to Plum Village, and one of the monks had said to me, I had to really pay attention because his English was kind of not, it just didn't, it was, you know, hard to understand because his accent was so thick, or what I thought was an accent. And he's like, well, why are you, what is it that, you know, leads you to want to come here? And he said, you do realize that you will come with your problems. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Well, look, understand. He said, just because someone wants to go to a mountaintop doesn't mean that what's already inside of them isn't going to go to the mountaintop with them. He said, I would really encourage you to engage deeper in your life, you know, live the four precepts, you know, live the realization of the Sangha, of the community, of bringing everyone together in that fidelity together as one community, as one family. He's like, live that in your life. He says, you're going to get challenges in that and, you know, growth that you wouldn't get in a situation where you would think that you were escaping. But he's like, trust me, when you got here, after you were in the system itself and you were in that Sangha, in the community, that's going to unlock things within you that you may actually have even quicker access to in your daily, everyday life that you're trying to get away from. He said the reason you're trying to get away is because you're trying to get away from something that's already inside of you. And he said it's not going somewhere else that's going to help you get rid of that. It's actually holding it in your hands and embracing it and allowing it to be that'll allow it to go away. My friend Colby Collins, I loved what he used to always say. Colby would say, just touch it. It's like a mirage. You know, you've got that pain, that sadness, that fear, whatever it may be, the anger. Be willing to touch it. And it's almost like as soon as you touch it, you realize it's not real. Saying it's not real won't do that. If we're consciously just yakking that it's not real without actually doing the work itself, that actually builds the ego. And then you get that disengagement, that, you know, false detachment where people will say, oh, well, none of it's real anyway, which is a great way to not live life. And then you can see them always on top of the sheeny, clean, shiny smile. There's like this raging beast right below the surface because they're not willing to engage. And that's an old paradigm that I really see falling away right now. And like I said, the younger ones that are coming through, they're not interested in playing that game whatsoever. At the end of this past Sunday, I did a 3-day ISIS, Aramaic Secrets of ISIS Mary Magdalene retreat, the Divine Feminine, you know, during Mother's Day weekend in Asheville here. And there was a girl that showed up at the end of the retreat who wasn't actually part of it, who just started asking me all these kinds of, someone directed her to me because she all of a sudden had little balls of light shooting out of her hands, and people are like, well, you need to go talk to Dale. And I was so encouraged because I didn't have to slog through all kinds of garbage to communicate with her. She was just so open, and she was so courageous, and she was willing to allow herself to be vulnerable and let her stuff come up just in a 45-minute conversation. And I realized I wasn't constantly having to rephrase things for her, because what happens a lot of times is people confuse what is actually anti-conditioning. They'll confuse that with anti-intuitive. They'll think that, oh my God, you know, this is, you know, everything he's saying is making my gut go crazy. It's against all of my greatest intuition, so they assume I'm wrong. But that's not actually anti-intuitive. That's anti-conditioning. That is those patterns that are already inside of us. All the veils built up upon each other, they start resonating and they start burning, because when you hear truth, anything unlike it is going to burn in the process. But when you relate with the world through those veils, which we all do to some degree, everyone, including Eckhart Tolle or whatever name you want to pull out of the hat, we all relate through those veils to some degree. And the stronger we relate through them, whether it's unconsciously or partially consciously, the more we're going to suffer in any present moment, because we're not willing to feel what is. And we got to learn how to forgive, which is, in Aramaic, that's removing the root of my suffering. It's not pardoning, as in the Greek idea of I pardon you, I let you off the hook, which of course allows me to stuff it back down until the next person resonates it and it pops back up. What that actually means is I remove the root of my suffering. I cancel the goal that I have that I'm seeking out of this moment, and that's what forgiveness means, so that actually I can be in the full presence of this moment. And what in Aramaic was the word yalmana. Mana is that divine sustenance from within that can only happen in this present moment. But in order to get to yalmana, you have to go through the desert first. Moses went through the desert to awaken the yalmana from heaven, which is that limitless state of being. Yeshua went into his desert experience 40 years and 40 days to awaken the yalmana within him. And you got to realize it's not some future. It's not some moment that's going to be better than this moment. It's this moment. Everything is right here and it's right now. And if there's any reason that we're not willing to be in the moment, it's because we're not willing to feel what's happening, because we're seeking some kind of goal. And if we can forgive what we need from this moment or from the person in front of us, whether it be child or neighbor or boss or spouse or whoever, we're not actually going to see who's there. They're just going to be an embedded secret below the surface of our awareness, and we're not going to see the actual human being before us. And children, to me, I can imagine no greater, like I said, no greater test or reward in terms of being a parent, because they'll show us anything and everything that's inside of us that a common casual acquaintance out there on the town wouldn't have access to within us. So that's the real work.
Absolutely. And it was such a freeing moment for myself when I finally, you know, shifted from having the concept and into the experience of my husband being a reflection of myself. All of a sudden, there wasn't, you know, just this jerk showing up to make my day or my moment miserable. It was a showing of me, of what I had going on inside of me, and not that he's there to be a jerk or anything less than the awesome, amazing person that he is, but instead to view him as a healer and as a teacher. And now I look, and whenever I do feel that spark, whenever I do feel that charge come up inside me, which is so far less often than what it used to be, then I'm able to say, you know, from a genuine space of thank you for bringing this up, because had you not brought this up within me, I would be walking around with this just lying dormant until somebody else triggered it inside of me. So it does give me this opportunity to do exactly what you just said, to be able to walk over to it and just touch it and look at it and just recognize it, instead of shoving it back down or, you know, diverting my attention or moving on to something that evokes better feeling from inside of me. But instead I can just look at it, and if it's anything less than that awesome, amazing, wonderful, gloriousness that is all that exists, then it is just an illusion. But that illusion is such a reality until I do just that, until I do, as you say, you know, walk up and just touch it. And by touching it, to me, that's just looking at it. It's saying, okay, what do I know to be true about this situation? What do I know to be true overall, beyond how I'm feeling right now in this moment? And from that perspective, I'm able to realize, okay, he's not just some jerk that's here to press my buttons and kick me off. He's my husband who has committed to loving me and being with me and sharing his life with me. So chances are he's not trying to push my buttons. Chances are he's just simply being him, and or who he thinks he has to be or who he thinks that he is in this moment. And it's going to be until I remove all of my filters and I'm able to see just God expressed in human form when I look at him, if I'm seeing anything less than that, I'm buying into an illusion. And it's an illusion of my own making from my own filters. And as I continue to shift and move these filters off of my vision and my interpretation of the world around me, it just reveals such a beautiful truth. And, you know, it's funny because sometimes it is just simply the act of saying, I'm feeling this inside of me, and I'm curious as to where it comes from or what it is or what I think that it is. That's walking up and touching it. That's taking an honest look at it, and it immediately will just shift it into a different state of being, and I guess accessing different parts of my brain to look at the same situation, but it allows me that ability to remove those layers, to remove those veils, to remove those filters that's making life appear to be some way different than how it actually is. And every single time, for myself, inside of me, I hit a point several years ago before I really started doing this work that I thought that our relationship could not be anymore. And that, my mind just did this whole number on me of changing our past history to fit not working out instead of fitting working out. And everything just had shifted inside of me to create this story that we could not work out as a couple. And as I was introduced to this work of taking this 100% responsibility and surrendering to something beyond what I think is happening in the moment, as every single illusion would pop up, every time that something would come up, I would look at it and I would look at it and I would look at it, and just the recognition of it sometimes was enough to have it fall away. Sometimes it was a contemplation over, you know, where's the love, where's the awesomeness, where's the God, until I could find it. But as I started doing this work, it completely transformed my entire relationship. And one thing that I have found is that all the stuff that I thought was his, this is his stuff, his problem, his issues, every single one of them, 100% of the time, it comes down to my issues because it's my world and it's my perception and it's my experience, and then that puts the responsibility back on me. So it might be a bitter pill to swallow that I'm creating my own suffering, but it's also the most liberating thing ever to realize that I am creating my own suffering because I cannot control the choices of other people. I can change the choices that I make within myself. And that whole reflection is just definitely a keystone of the transformation that I've experienced and that I utilize day in, day out. Okay, instead of this thing in my life I'm not at peace with, so therefore let me seek out to change it. Instead, okay, this thing in my life I'm not at peace with, okay, what's my story that I'm creating that's keeping me from the truth of the situation, that's keeping me from my peace, from my fulfillment? And that is such a powerful tool and something that I really work with my clients on. And it's not always an easy concept to really take on. And, you know, we have those years of defaulting back to how we used to be of, you know, well, I wouldn't feel this way if you hadn't done that, or I wouldn't think this if you hadn't done that. And just really taking that time to do, as you say, you move past the information and into the transformation. Through that transformation, I myself personally have found it. I really challenge anybody to take this on and see if you find the same thing to be true for you, because I would not be surprised if you do. Through this challenge, I have found it's all my stuff, and it's always my stuff. And as many stories as I can create over how it's the other person, I can just as easily create stories that show that it's not that person. And in that ownership, the illusion does fall away, and I'm able to get to a center being that's unlike anything that I've ever experienced before.
You know, a huge key for me has been, and you sort of touched on it, for me is just being curious. In the West here, we mistake escape for detachment, and we think that detachment means, you know, to not let yourself feel it. But what actually detachment is in the Buddhist sense or in the Eastern sense is that it's amazing because it was one of the seven habits of highly effective people that Stephen Covey would speak of, and it was the one that resonated with my heart so deeply because he would put his two fists together and he would grind his knuckles together, and he was talking about general life in general. We're in these challenges and these intense times. He's like, but if you can just be proactive, pull the knuckles apart, allow that space, allow there to be a gap, allow there to be an opening, a spaciousness in the intensity of the moment. Take a few steps back in your awareness and just be curious about how you're feeling. Be curious about the situation that appears to be unfolding in front of you. And when you're able to do that, the way I explain it in a lot of my talks lately is I liken it to pointillism of Georges Seurat, great artist. And if you look, if you go into a great art museum, like the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City when I was a teenager, and I walk up to a Seurat painting, and if you get real close, all you see is these scattered chaotic dots. You move back a little and things start to become a little more intelligible. You move back even more. You're no longer stuck in the middle of all of the trees, but you're able to see the actual forest as the wholeness of a forest. You can see the wholeness of the experience, the wholeness of the painting. That is not detachment, which would be not allowing yourself to feel it, turning away. Let's just affirm light and stuff it back down. Although what is going to happen is the people that are telling you to turn away are going to tell you we're not stuffing it back down, but that's exactly what's happening. We're not looking at it, but it's actually disengaging, detaching, being willing to feel whatever's happening. But the key for me, like I said, is about being curious, which means it's like you've got, I call it the cosmic question mark. The cosmic question mark is above your head. I'm very curious. So what is it that's happening here? I'm not trying to figure it out. I'm feeling my way through it. It's going to give me deeper roots into the deeper parts of my psyche. That word psyche is a Greek word that means soul. The word soul in Aramaic or self in Aramaic is nafsha. It's nefesh in Hebrew. It's nafs in Arabic. And that word nafsha means breath of life. So when we think of the soul, we're thinking of the breath of our life. When Yeshua said to love anyone you think of, well, detrachim lekerabakaik nafsha, love your neighbor as yourself is what we get through standard Christianity, but what he was saying in Aramaic was love anyone you think of as the breath of your life. Think about that. It engages the breath, and that's also what he meant by love your enemies, which is those people that you stop breathing in their presence, because the number one mechanism of disengaging in such a way so as to not feel it and to escape the situation is to stop breathing. And you'll notice even kids when they're 3 years old, if the feeling is really, really, really intense and they're not shown how to process that, they'll stomp their foot down and they'll hold their breath. And every single situation, especially in our younger years, when we have an emotionally intense moment, whether it be positive or negative, and we're not breathing, we lock it into the system, we cordon it off. That was called a demon or shadain, shayada, a demon or a devil in ancient Aramaic, which isn't something outside that possesses you, but it's a part of, you know, it's almost like a cordoned off part of the energy system that's no longer allowed to breathe. It crystallizes in our energy body. And that's exactly what happens when kids do that. And then the three-year-old girl that stomped and went and didn't allow herself to breathe and didn't allow herself to express herself is going to be 37 years old, and she's going to be in a love relationship, and her husband's going to, or husband or her male or female partner is going to say just the right thing. It's going to trigger the 3 or the 6 or the 7-year-old experience, and it's going to fly up. It's going to become a veil over the situation. And if I don't know how to forgive, to remove the root of my suffering, to be conscious in this process, I'm going to look at the person in front of me who is the catalyst, who is triggering what's already inside of me. I'm going to say, this is because of you. Now this relationship no longer works because it's irreparable. And the only reason it's irreparable is because we're not taking responsibility for our own emotional architecture, for the things that we've locked into our psyche, into the breath of, well, we're not locking it into our breath. It's locked in by the stopping of the breath. And if we can get that and understand it, and we could each just take care of our own part of the woods, we would understand the absurdity of extreme Christianity, extreme Islam, and extreme Judaism. When it's my emotional turmoil is your fault and that I'm doing the will of God, but you're not doing the will of God if you're in emotional turmoil. If you have emotional turmoil, what you're telling me is that you don't have the presence in your life. You are fragmented, which is what the word devil means in Sanskrit. It means to fragment, to cut something away from its true source. So if you're in emotional turmoil, you're telling me you're not aware of the presence of the one, the absolute, the only being. So don't tell me that that's the will of God, because what that actually is your own emotional architecture that you're unwilling to process and unwilling to allow to the surface and let burn off in the light. Because the more the light intensifies in the light, the more you burn. And that burning and or resistance of it, and our resistance is what creates our suffering. That burning and that suffering and that will be in direct proportion to our resistance. So the more our resistance, the more we suffer in that process. The more we're allowing and willing that light to burn through our veils, the less we suffer, and we actually experience greater awakening on a daily basis. And I can't imagine living my life that old way anymore. It does occasionally come back. It does come back and drop in my lap, and I forget. And then I do my best to remember in the next moment, because it all happens now. It's all in this moment. And the moment that I was talking about, this moment, when I just said it 5 seconds ago, is now that moment, because now I'm in this moment, which is now this moment, not the moment that I said that moment. It's now, 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 now. Now is the end of time, but we have to be willing to be in the experience, to be curious, to disengage, and to detach, though not to escape from it, because escaping means you stuff it down until the next time it's triggered up, and then you're told to turn toward the light. But unfortunately, turning toward the light, you don't have to turn toward the light, because you are the light. And if you are the light, it's your responsibility to process anything unlike light in your life. And the truth is that once you touch it and you send the light onto it, it's no longer there. You don't walk into a dark room and try to push out darkness unless you've got something wrong with you. You just turn on the light. And we are the ones we've been waiting for. I've really had enough of this sort of candy-coated, you know, paint sugar coating on top of everything thing. We need real spirituality, and I'm telling you right now, the younger generation will not accept all of this junk that we've dropped in their laps. They don't want it. They want to be real, they want to be engaged, and they want to be whole. And like I said, that's the most exciting thing for me. I am clear that if there's anything what I'm doing, maybe it may not fully manifest in my life, but I'm clearly doing this for the seven generations and the seven beyond that and the seven beyond that. I'm doing this for my kids, and I'm doing it for my grandchildren, because my heart is in their heart. And, you know, it's just awesome. It's an honor to be out there, or even just to be in my own home and doing this. It's an awesome way to live a life. It's so much better than just selling my soul to some corporate entity and then drinking myself into oblivion every night while I watch the news or a sports game or something. That's fine if that's what someone wants to do, but it definitely wasn't my path in this life. So blessings to everyone who's stepped forth. And in the words of Gandhi, the best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. And it's almost become my I need to get a T-shirt or something. It's all over my house. It's everywhere. I seek to live my life that way. So
I so resonate with everything that you're saying. I'm just sitting over here nodding my head, yes, yes, yes. And that is an identical experience to the one that I've been having on my own over the last several years, as I have been losing myself in service to other people. And that's what has gotten or allowed that tapping into that fearlessness is just that service to other people. And even, again, we talked about, you know, the meaning of words and what they mean to people. As I share that mission with others, not everybody's on board and understanding how we can really prosper through service to others. And I know that it just has to be their experience with it. You touched on so many brilliant things, and I love that you talked about the curiosity. I do teaching for people on understanding and honoring the inner child, and being able to find those child, not only be able to understand the stories that we created as children that we're now defining and living our life by as adults, which is keeping us limited and stuck into that same spot of suffering, but also what qualities of children that we can bring into our adult life and really help us. And that childlike curiosity is one that I always touch on. You know, bring that same curiosity of having to know the inside and out, backward and forward, how things work, and release all the knowledge and all the knowing and all the stuff and all the, you know, the things that we know how things work, therefore we no longer question. And to bring that curiosity back into play, and then bring that childlike ability to play in life now as an adult. You know, where do we hit that point where we stop playing? You know, I look at my daughter, everything's play for her. everything's play. And then we hit some point in life where, okay, enough with the playing, and now it's time to work and be serious and be grown up. But when we can instead bring that childlike quality of play to our adult life, then if you are in a position where you are in that corporate 9-to-5 place of being, you can make that a game. You can make that fun. You can make that something that you're going to go play at work instead of working and serious and grinding and everything else that pops along with it. But I love that you bring up that curiosity, because it is that curiosity that I bring to my teachings as well. You know, just what if? What if everything that I'm saying tonight is absolutely without a doubt the truth? Can you go into your world and experiment for the next 30 days as if what I just said is true, and then allow yourself to have the experience and then decide for yourself once you get the results which way you prefer to keep on living life? Because it simply is that. If I'm wrong in everything that I do, well, at least I'm happy. At least I have something that is more fulfilling than doing what everybody else is doing and being limited in the results and in the feedback that life is giving me.
I will say this, though. It's so great to have an actual – it's why I love doing the Aramaic Fridays with Dr. Rice and everybody that's on those calls, Tim and Michelle, and because it's real dialogue. Blessings to, you know, all the interviews I've done. I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of radio and television interviews. But it's not very common to have an actual dialogue. It's usually a bunch of preset questions, and the more someone is set to their questions, the less life there is in it when we're addicted to the frame. But when we're willing to let the frame, the structure of comfort, go and be in the moment, maybe use a couple of questions as pointers. But when it's actually open dialogue, it's so much more rich, not only for me in the experience, but I believe for those people who are listening as well. So I want to honor you for that. It's great. It's really actually discussing rather than just rehashing what we think people want to hear, which I think, like I said, the younger ones aren't going to tolerate that one anymore.
Right. Right. Well, I love you for saying that for certain, because I definitely feel like a sense of responsibility to have certain information to let people know what we're going to talk about, and people expect, you know, somebody to be introduced and to follow like a set kind of structure and wrap everything up so neat and tidy at the end. And I didn't feel that. I just wanted to talk to you and to be able to share what transpired between us with other people, because I feel there's so much value that gets brought to the table anytime that you open your mouth and are sharing how you live your life with others. And I have found the same thing. Again, it's not a matter of carrying around these concepts and sharing them with other people. This is my life, and this is how I function whenever I'm teaching a class and whenever I'm at home with my family. It's a never-ending state of being, and allowing of unfolding in awareness to the now and how we have the power right now to make a different choice. If you don't like what you're feeling, you don't like the direction things are going, you don't have to wait till somebody else says change. You can change right then in the moment and make a different choice. And the more that I apply it, the more I see it reflected back in my husband, and the more that I see it reflected in my friends and my family, where we have been so conditioned on how to be with one another. And I just so look forward to gifting all of this over to my daughter. And you know, the babes, I think they just absolutely get it. And it's a matter of keeping that in the forefront more so than teaching her how to be. I just made an agreement with her when she was first born. I said, all right, Doodles, which at the time I didn't call her Doodles, but that's how I would speak to her now. You know, I'll make you a deal. I will teach you to navigate this world, and you teach me how to navigate the other one. And that's the partnership that we've had. And when I find myself, you know, oh, this is not what I had planned for the day. This isn't how my schedule goes. I didn't schedule in time to change your diaper one more time. I didn't schedule in, you know, time to clean you up one more time. Instead of reverting to that space of being, just simply looking at her and saying, whoa, this, though, is not what I thought was going to happen today, and then taking it from that space and being aware of the energy that I bring to her. And, of course, I'm sure I am not doing it 100%, 100% of the time, but it's 100% of the times that I can be conscious and aware. That is what I strive to bring to the table, is just an allowing of her to be a flexibility in how that looks on the outside, and really being aware of what energy I'm throwing at her. And the more that I listen to your Aramaic Fridays and listen to Dr. Michael Rice's sharings as well, just really seeing that whole idea of a power person in our life, and as they project their energy out onto us and that energy comes into us, how that builds into who we become in life, it's really taken it to a whole nother level with me of awareness of what it is that I'm energetically bringing to my engagement with her. And I love the conversation today because that really has brought it into a new perspective. If she's being whiny, if she's being anything less than her awesome, amazing self, then it is a reflection of me. And she actually did show me early on a really just kind of concrete example. When she has all of her needs met, and this is what I believe for everybody, but she just really gave me that concrete example. When all of her basic needs are met, when she is rested, when she has her belly full, when she has, you know, dry diaper on, when all of her basic needs are met 100%, 100% of the time, she chooses joy. And I feel, I use that example a lot for myself and in teaching others, that anytime that we're dealing with anything less than joy and awesomeness from another person, there's some need that has not been met. And while it's not our responsibility to make sure that all the needs of others are met, we do have the ability to make the choice to assist others in helping them meet their needs, or just recognizing that there's a need that needs to be met. And once those needs are satisfied, I believe that we'll all default to that space of absolute joy.
Mm. That's exactly it. Our little girl just this weekend, I just here at this Divine Feminine retreat, and I'm talking about the children, and Shamaya just quietly comes up the steps and peeks in and comes into the room and twirls and then sits on my lap. And there was large spaces of time where we just stopped and we just watched her. It was beautiful. My phone's buzzing. I think this one's dying now too. So.
Yes, and I know I'm seeing that we're hitting at 3:30, and I want to be respectful of your time and what you have going on today as well. And I so appreciate you being open to having this conversation. If anybody listens to this audio and wants more information or to have more discussions on how to bring in that level of emotional responsibility for yourself, but also for your kids and the example that you're setting for them, this is a topic that I plan on continuing. And a big reason why I think that Keely was brought into my life is to open up this whole segment of parenting, which I could not tap into. I heard you say this on one of the interviews the other day on Aramaic Friday about how, you know, there's going to be a point that when you become a parent, you know something that you could only have the concept of before. And I think that's a big reason that she came into my life, is to really solidify this and be able to reach other people who are parents or plan to be parents or have parents of their own, to understand what is happening in our relationships with one another and being able to own with ours and release the rest. So any other things that you want to add before we wrap it up?
Just thank you. And, you know, just one last thing is that it's not about the words we say. It's not about our actions. It's about our presence or the lack thereof. And the only time there isn't presence is the moments when we're holding off presence, whether consciously or unconsciously, because there's something else we're seeking out of this situation or this relationship or this moment. When we can let go of what we think we want, we can come into the realization that there's nothing lacking essentially in our being. We already are what we're looking for. We are that light. You can't find it outside of yourself. That's the trick of it, because it's us. It's who we are. We can only see that reflection come back. But if we put veils between us and that reflection by trying to find and seek and get something out of the situation, we'll kill the very light that we are in the reflection coming back. And that's that realization. That's what it meant, the Alpha and the Omega. It means I am the beginning, I am the end, I am the head at the beginning, the head at the end, and I am the original, and I am the reflection. And We got to remember that. We are what we are looking for. Like Rumi said, don't look for water, be thirsty.
So awesome. So awesome, Dale. Thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for your example. And just the last thing that came up for me on the whole reflection thing is when I look at Keely, this amazing, beaming, beautiful, just limitless child, I have to remember that she's a reflection of me as well. And I say all the time, if she's a reflection of the choices that I've been making in my life over the last several years, then I'm absolutely on the right track because she's just absolutely magnificent. And I know that you could say the same thing about Shamaya because she radiates that same light and that same essence. So, okay, we'll go ahead and head out for the day. If you have any more interest in learning about Dale, any of his teachings, I know that they can find all of your stuff at DaleAllenHoffman.com. Or what's the other thing, Dale? Just put in Dale in Aramaic in Google?
Yeah, just write Dale Aramaic in Google. It'll send you – I would definitely say check out the YouTube page because there's a lot on there as well, a lot of videos.
Absolutely. That's a great station to tune into on YouTube and just hit on that random shuffle and let it just infiltrate your day in and day out.
Infiltrate, what a good word.
Awesome. And anybody interested in finding out more about me, of course, you can find me at holisticrestoration.com. You can find me on YouTube as well. Hours of videos there as well along these same lines of teaching. So, Dale, thank you for your time. I look forward to having future discussions with you. And the next time you're in the area or I'm out there in Asheville, I'm definitely going to reach out so we can connect again.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day, Dale. I look forward to talking to you again.